All right. We're going to transfer to our next course for this session. If I can get mine to open here. Talk among yourselves. And unredeemable. And I just don't care. Lee, were you the kid in grade school who was, you know who he was?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. But in the early grades, did you irritate your teachers? Oh, yeah. I'm going to try one more time, see if this will open. What'd you have to say, Jam? You've been so quiet today, that makes me nervous. That's all it takes, huh? Uh-oh, here it comes. What does that mean? Subject to the judgment of God? Okay. Meanwhile, back in the spirit, let's go to essential doctrines, and we'll do a session. We're going to run through the basic doctrines that you would get in a systematic theology course. Systematic theology attempts to take the basic doctrines of the Bible and to group them in topics and headings. And most systematic theologies begin with bibliology, which is the theological study of the Bible. So that's where we'll start. We're just going to hit some of the basic highlights of theology, and we'll just be working on this course through the, we only have one more class now and then next semester, and I don't know, we'll finish sometime next year just as we go. The idea is you don't need to be theologians, but you should have a basic working knowledge of biblical theology. As ministers of the gospel, you should have a basic working knowledge. So, Pep, what did you get? Lonely?
Yeah.
Over here?
Gilbert left him.
Yeah, he sure did. He left him dry. Where'd Archie go? He didn't give me any indication. You know, Archie's like that. He just sort of, he's like the wind. Where'd Archie go? Okay, so we'll hit some of the highlights of bibliology. First of all, number one, the doctrine of revelation. The doctrine of revelation teaches that God reveals himself to mankind in such a way that we can know him and fellowship with him. J.I. Packer said, nobody would know the truth about God or be able to relate to him in a personal way had not God first acted to make himself known. So revelation is God initiating a relationship with us by taking the first steps of revealing himself. And it's useless to get frustrated with lost people or even saved people who can't see something. Because if God does not reveal the truth to them, they won't see it. They won't see it. So the doctrine of revelation says that if we know anything accurate or true about God, it's only because he's revealed it to us. It's not because of our own study or application. It's not because of our own brilliance or wit. It's only because of revelation. And if we don't know something about God, it's because he has not revealed it to us. Now, revelation generally has two categories that we talk about. The first one, first subheading, is general revelation. General revelation. General revelation is God's communication of himself to all persons at all times and all places. Romans chapter 1 is one of the classic texts for general revelation. Paul says, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. Asel, what's the Apostle Paul talking about there? The things that have been clearly seen. What is he referring to? Yeah, just go ahead and talk to us.
Like the universe, the sky,
yeah, the natural creation is being referred to there, yes. Now, we don't have the verse here, but in chapter 2 of Romans, Paul gives us the second indicator of how God gives general revelation to people, and that's the conscience. So through the natural creation and through the conscience, Paul says in chapter 2 of Romans, verse 11 and 12, that God has written his laws upon the heart, our conscience alternately accusing or defending. You see? So every culture in the world you go to, whether there's been a Bible there or not, they all have a sense of right and wrong. Now, that sense has been perverted, obviously, by demonic influence and the sin of their own heart. It may or may not be a biblical standard, but they have this sense there's right and there's wrong. Where'd they get that? God wrote it on the heart of every human being. So God reveals himself to every human being on the planet through conscience. Their own heart is telling them there's a God. And the natural creation screams out. That's why David says, or the psalmist says in 19, that the heavens declare the glory of God. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. That's Psalm 19, verse 1 and 2. Now, that's not just metaphor and poetry. That's the truth. The creation declares the invisible attributes, the divine power, the nature of God. One of my favorite C.S. Lewis quotes, he said, "The atheist can never be too careful because God has littered the creation with evidence of himself." You got to be really careful if you're an atheist because you bump into God everywhere you go. It's all around. And that's why Paul tells us in chapter 1 of Romans, verse 18, that they suppress the truth of God. That's an active choice to hold it down. It's a fascinating word he uses there, suppress. It was a nautical term in the first century. So it shows up in a lot of first century writings in reference to sailing. And the term meant, and was used most often, that would refer to someone who was holding a rudder of a ship in the midst of a storm. So the storm is trying to blow the ship off course, and there's a huge force, and the pilot is holding down the rudder because this gale force wind is trying to blow him off, take him somewhere he doesn't want to go. That's the picture that Paul gives us of lost man. He's holding down the truth of God. It's like there's a gale force wind that's blowing on him, trying to get him to turn towards God. But he actively holds down because he does not want to deter from his course, which is to live for self. Because if you don't do that, the truth of God, you get bombarded with it. Your conscience will start talking to you all the time. I know when I was a sinner, it was a long time ago, but I can remember. I was saved as a 19-year-old college student. And I use all sorts of things to drown out the voice. And it was fine as long as there were people around, the party was going on, as long as the music is real loud. But when the party's over and I'm all by myself and the music is turned off, then that voice, that voice. And you have to work hard and push it down and push it down and come up with all kinds of justifications to continue to stay on course. Because the natural creation is just screaming at you every day. And your own heart, you're getting it from both sides. The natural world from the outside and your conscience from the inside just screaming at you. You know there's a God. You know there's a God. You know there's a God. That's general revelation, you see. And every man has this. And so every man, notice what Paul says, and the key phrase here is clearly seen. You see that? Have been clearly seen from what has been made so that men are without excuse. So no one will have an excuse. I didn't hear. No one told me. There was no Bible in our town. Nobody ever brought the gospel. I didn't know anything about it. I was raised a Muslim. I didn't have a chance. How can you send me to hell? Nobody will be without an excuse. Because God has communicated to every person everywhere. It's general revelation, the communication of His nature to every person on the planet. Everybody is without excuse. Now, judgment is always according to light. So the more truth you have, the greater your judgment will be. So people in Metro Manila, where there's so much gospel ministry around, have the opportunity to hear the gospel. They'll be judged much more severely than people in unreached tribes and areas where they've never had a chance to hear the gospel. And yet those people will still be judged, not on rejecting Christ, like many people in Manila or the U.S. will, which is a much greater judgment, but they will be judged by rejecting the light that came from general revelation, that came from the creation and from their own internal conscience. Does that make sense? Yeah? Any questions at any time, comments, thoughts? We'll just have a good little dialogue, okay? You all right? Special revelation, then, is number two. Special revelation is God's authoritative word conveyed objectively and propositionally through the exclusive medium of the Bible. So you understand the difference. Special revelation is what you can get from reading a Bible. General revelation is everything you can find out about God without a Bible. Now, here's the important question, Bong, and we'll see how you do with this. Can a person who just has general revelation, can they be saved? There's a microphone right there. $64,000 question. Just has general revelation. Can they be saved?
If a person, by just having a general revelation.
In other words, what you can know about God from the created world and from your own conscience, can a person with general revelation be saved?
I believe so.
Bong says yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. Who agrees with Bong? Let me see your hand. Raise him up. Let me see your hand. Okay, great. Who disagrees with Bong? Let me see your hand. Ladies? I want to see hands, okay? This is not a hand. This is not a hand. This is a hand, okay? Go ahead. Who disagrees with Bong? Raise your hand up. High. Disagrees with Bong. Keep it up. Come on, Jackie. Hold it up. All right, okay. Everybody who has their hand up is right. Everybody else is a heretic. Sorry. General revelation is enough to damn you, but not enough to save you. Now, in our basic humanism, we would love the fact that people get saved through general revelation, and it seems so unfair, and how can they be judged, and they didn't have a chance to hear. Without special revelation, God revealing Himself in His Word, you cannot be saved. Because there is salvation in none other but the name of Jesus. And the one revelation you cannot get from creation or conscience is of the atoning sacrifice of Christ Jesus. And therefore, without that, you cannot be saved. Jerome. Filipinos always bring up that question. Yeah.
Where do babies go?
They go to limbo, right? Yeah, we won't talk about that one right now. Let's just deal with the general and special revelation. Those of you, the heretics in Bong's church.
I came from Pastor Winston's class, Joe.
Oh my gosh, that's really bad. Yeah, go ahead. Give us a question.
I heard this story before, like there's this Muslim
never read the Bible, but he dreamt of Jesus and in the dream Jesus talked to him. So he never read the Bible before, but because of that experience he woke up and it's like he accepted Jesus Christ.
Through so that what revelation. Did he have? Special revelation.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, yeah, yeah. Okay,
yeah,
I get it now.
Of Jesus Christ. Yeah, so yeah. The living word.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah. Occasionally, Charles and Jam, you with us? Occasionally, Jesus shows up on his own and does special revelation. That's extra special. That's how we say it in Nashville. That's extra special. Extra, because it's just, it's not just the Bible, it's him. It's Jesus himself, right? So that's extra special. Occasion, but that's special revelation. Right? Excel. Yeah, damned. 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 Huh? The Jews could believe on Christ before he came. There was a lamb. The gospel was preached. You know the first time the gospel was preached? Genesis 3, verse 15. It's the seed of woman who will crush the head of the serpent. It's the first time the gospel was preached. You know the second time the gospel was preached? Right after that, when God killed an animal, the blood was shed, and he clothed their nakedness. So people have been believing the gospel from the very beginning. Prior, way before Christ came, right? But if you don't believe the gospel, you're damned. Before or after Christ? What should that make you do? There should be two responses. First one, worship. Why me? Why? Why? Why me? Worship. The second one is go tell. Go tell. That's general versus special revelation. We okay?
Yeah.
Thoughts, comments? Yes, Lee. Somehow I felt that you might have something to say. Alma, could you pass in the microphone? We want these gems of wisdom recorded on tape.
I'm just a little puzzled on how, well, of course, I just can't, it's just that what you said was very, very big of a chunk. And general revelation is enough for you to be subject to damnation.
Yeah.
But not enough for salvation. Yeah. And although I do, and I really do acknowledge with all my heart, yes, Lord, you see me right now, that there is no other name under heaven and on earth by which we are saved, and that's Jesus Christ. But I'm just puzzled on, maybe it's because of, a worldview, the way I was brought up, maybe the culture here in the Philippines. And I all along thought that if you were probably a person indigenous, didn't know how to read the Bible. In fact, you may be from the mountains and you didn't know how to communicate, but you were, by God's sovereignty, born. How can the, number one, how can I go share the gospel to you? And how would you know I'm sharing the gospel? How would you, who's she? I remember Pastor Jackie Sue, he didn't know who Jesus, he had to look at the dictionary and see who Jesus was.
Yeah.
And so, just those questions really running in my mind right now.
He didn't know who Jesus was, but he knew enough to be judged before God. Go ahead, give that mic to Sal.
The reason that I raised my hand, because I saw a documentary and a testimony of a guy who doesn't know about Jesus. I think he's from Vietnam. But there was a time, there was a war, and then he was captured, and they're about to kill him with a plastic. And then he prayed, the God of the universe, he said, his head. And then something happened that he didn't die.
Okay.
And he was rescued. He was saved by God. And then, now he's a
his
pastor.
His life was saved,
yeah, his life was saved. And that's why he started searching who is the God of the universe.
Okay.
And then, he became a pastor. But,
after he heard the gospel preached. After he heard the gospel preached. Yeah. Prior to the gospel.
But God saved his life.
What about that pastor?
What do you mean, what about that?
Maybe that person was citing as an example. Maybe someone indigenous or somewhere from the mountain and didn't have any way to communicate.
Yeah.
But let's just pretend. That, let's pretend that from the general revelation, there must really be a God, but he didn't know how to say it. He just has that.
And he was such a nice guy that God just let him in.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he had a good heart. Yeah. I thought the heart is more deceitful than all else. There is none righteous. No such thing as a good heart, is there?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to hit people in the face with it.
Yeah.
Ali.
Yeah.
How can you preach to a person who's blind and deaf and mute? Like how can that person be saved then?
Yeah, they can be.
How? Like,
huh? I mean, there's ministry to people like that. So I don't know how.
Okay.
They can be communicated with, right? Helen Keller was blind, deaf, and dumb, right? So she wrote books and so. There are ways, I don't know, but there are people who do that. They have that kind of ministry to people like that. So they hear the gospel. Yeah, but you got to hear the gospel, okay? Yeah, Charles?
How about the people who is mentally retarded?
Yeah.
Can't understand.
Are they sinners?
Yes.
Yeah. Sinners go to hell.
So, you mean that God didn't allow them or give them a chance to...
Well, just because a person may be mentally handicapped doesn't mean he can't grasp the fact that he's a sinner. That God can reveal himself to that person and they respond. It may not look like our response, and it certainly wouldn't.
Thank you.
But if God doesn't reveal himself to that person, he's damned and has no chance. Whether he's got a PhD or he's got an IQ of 35. And then we'll get to Merv.
Just maybe something very, I guess, miraculous for me as an experience as well. Last Sunday, we were preaching the gospel all throughout our Sunday services, and Pastor Nixon, for the longest time, haven't done an altar call, but he did so on one of his service. And the first person I approached and prayed for was a normal-looking person. But after the prayer, I realized I was talking to an autistic person.
What? Autistic.
An autistic person. He had autism. And
yeah.
I would not belabor and elaborate on how he was responding to my questions, but he was he had mental disorders. So what I was so fascinated, and I was very teary-eyed when I was telling Pastor Nixon this, is how could someone mentally sick be able to comprehend something that you know, you understand what I'm saying. And so I'm just saying that it really is a revelation. There is a special revelation, regardless if you're mentally challenged or not. So, and I've proven it true.
Yeah, pass the mic back, Julius.
I have a few things to say. The first one would be with regard to what he was saying. I would like to believe that God, in all his mercy and all his compassion, he would find a way to communicate with this indigenous people or the mentally retarded people. Right? I mean, if he
is like all indigenous people?
I mean, that at least that he can reach out to them in his own way that we cannot comprehend. We don't know how.
No, he's told us how. We got a Bible that tells
us
how.
It's the Bible.
It's Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so apart from Jesus Christ, there is no salvation.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, in that way, I'm not saying.
Yeah, no,
apart
if they accept
that,
Jesus Christ and his atoning sacrifice, then yes, they'll be saved, no matter where they are.
Yeah.
But there's no other method. There's no other kind of a plan B or.
Yeah, correct. Actually, I totally agree with that. Yeah, and I just remember that there was this video on YouTube. He was a famous preacher, I forgot his name. But when he was asked in a television show that, are there certain different ways going to God?
Sure, yeah.
Except for Jesus, aside from Jesus, then he said yes.
Right.
I cannot accept that fact.
Yeah.
It's like saying that there can be Muslims or Indians or Hindu people that can be saved, even though they don't accept Jesus. He's a preacher, and
I know who he is. I know this.
I forgot who he is.
Yeah, it's okay.
Anyways,
I won't tell you.
And going back to our point, general revelation. I mean, general revelation is also available too. I mean, these are the things that are known even to the devil. I mean, but they're not saved.
Right? Yeah, right. Well, but the devil does have special revelation. Yeah, he's rejected it, certainly, but he has special revelation. Can I move? Okay.
Just one last one.
One more.
Yeah. Can a person who believes in Jesus Christ but have a wrong theology be saved?
Well, let's hope so, because Bong had a wrong theology and he's saved, right?
No. Okay.
And most of you that raise your hand, so.
That's on the extremes. But so, meaning to say. how about the other. The people from the other religions.
Say again?
They believe in Jesus Christ, but they have a wrong theology. They have a wrong doctrine.
There's some kind of wrong theology that, you could probably still be saved. But there's some wrong theology that, no, you couldn't.
Okay.
So I don't want to go into a world religion course here now, but I wouldn't be surprised at all that there were saved Mormons. Now, they won't last very long as Mormons, but it wouldn't surprise me that still practicing and just been saved, not because of the preaching they got as a Mormon, just God revealed himself to them as they were reading the Bible and got saved. So, but they're still Mormons, at least for a while. Eventually. So. Let's go on. Let's move on. There's so much more interesting. That's just point one, okay?
Till 6 o'clock.
I want to write a song about this.
Yeah. All you got is general revelation. You are damned. No. I don't think that's what we want. But it should inform our worship. As we worship, just thinking, Lord, why me? Why? Why me? Okay, number two. This is still bibliology, right? This is the theology of the Bible. The doctrine of inerrancy. Inerrancy. You can see it spelt in that quote if you're wondering. The doctrine of inerrancy teaches that the Bible, in the original manuscripts, does not affirm anything that is contrary to fact. The Bible always tells the truth concerning everything it talks about. Now, let's read this quote and I'll make some comments. Inerrancy means that when all the facts are known, the scriptures in their original autographs and properly interpreted will be shown to be wholly true in everything they teach, whether that teaching has to do with doctrine, history, science, geography, geology, or other disciplines of knowledge. The Bible tells the truth in everything. Okay? Now, a few comments and a few thoughts. First of all, you notice this phrase, original manuscripts, or then in the quote, original autographs. Autograph means the self-writing, okay? So there was a time when Paul got some papyrus and wrote a letter to the Romans. I mean, there was an actual physical letter to the Romans that was delivered. Now, we don't have any of those documents. They're all long gone. We have all we have is manuscripts. A manuscript is a copy of the autograph. Okay? So, over the process of time, because we have scribes copying, and then someone copying the copy, and someone copying the copy of the copy, on and on. We have about, there's about 25,000 reputable manuscripts of the New Testament. About 25,000. 5,000 in the original language in Greek. And some of them are better than others, obviously. The earlier they are, the more accurate they are. Right? That would be obvious. The earliest manuscript we have dates to about 130 AD, which is probably 40 years after it was written. It's a fragment from the Gospel of John, chapter 18, and it dates from 130 AD. John probably wrote it around 90 to 95 AD, so about 30 to 35 years old, but it's just a fragment. We have whole books that are 100 or so years distant from the original autograph. And our best manuscripts come in the 4th century AD, so about 350 AD, whole New Testaments, okay? And there's a whole massive science of textual criticism that examines these manuscripts to determine, there is a way to determine if we have the authentic writing or not. And the reality is we have about 99.5% accuracy, okay? There's about 5% of the New Testament that we're not sure if we have the actual writing or not. That amounts to about 40 lines, about 400 words. That there is some doubt about. There is some question about. The good thing is that not one of those concerns any area of significant doctrine. I'll give you a few examples. Have you ever come across in your Bible this statement that Jesus said, this kind comes out by prayer? Or then some of your Bibles say prayer and fasting. Or then sometimes in the margin, it'll say the earliest manuscripts add... Yeah, that's one we don't know. The textual evidence is equal. It's 50-50. Maybe Jesus said this kind comes out by prayer. Maybe he said this kind comes out by prayer and fasting. We actually don't know at this point. But we do know one thing. Jesus told us to pray, and Jesus told us to fast. So it's a moot point, really. Isn't it? So it's these kinds of things. There's issues like that where we're not sure if it's this word or that word. But it doesn't affect any of our belief. It's just in the process of time, the way that God chose to reveal himself is through actual human beings. It's not some kind of mystical process like Joseph Smith discovering golden tablets. Right, that had been written by the hand of God or by the angel Moroni. It's men wrote and people copied their writings. And yet, miraculously, God's truth has persevered through all of those various different human, potential human failings. So that's the doctrine of inerrancy. Now, the doctrine of inerrancy, notice our subpoint, also allows for the use of approximations and the language of appearances. I'm going to explain a few of those things. First of all, you notice in that quote, the scriptures in the original address and properly interpreted will be shown to be holy. No, no, up in my statement. Where did I say this? In the original manuscripts, the inner meaning of the Bible. When all the facts are known. Okay, yeah. Sometimes in Scripture, we've had to wait for archaeological discoveries to help us understand something that looked like it was a discrepancy in the text. I'll give you an example. In the Synoptic Gospels, in Matthew and in Luke, both of them have an account of the healing of the blind beggar named Bartimaeus. Do you remember that? One of the synoptics, and I can't remember which one it was, tells us that Jesus met Bartimaeus after he was leaving the city of Jericho. The other one tells us that Jesus met blind Bartimaeus and healed him before he entered Jericho. And you see, for years, people who make a living out of finding errors in the Bible pointed to that error, you see? And if there's one error, then there could be two errors. If there's two errors, there could be three and five and 100. And how do you know anything can be trusted? So it took a while, but finally archaeological discoveries less than 50 years ago revealed that in the first century, there were two Jerichos. There was the old city that was a ruin and the new city. And of course, they were right next to each other. And so there was a place where people congregated in between. You see? So it was possible to meet Bartimaeus as you were leaving Jericho and at the same time as you were entering Jericho. You see? So the New Testament authors were totally accurate. It took us a while before the evidence caught up with the revelation. And there are lots of things like that we could talk about. So the scriptures, when all the facts are known, sometimes there's some things that we look at and we're not really sure right now. But when all the facts are known, because God is the author and he's communicated truth, and God's not confused about geography or science or history. He knows all facts at all times. God never has to remember. He has all facts are always available at all time, right? So, but now inerrancy allows for the use of approximations, you see, because we tend to put standards on the Bible that are abnormal that we don't keep even in our normal communication. In normal communication, we use approximations, right? How long is it going to take you to get there? 5 hours. If you show up 5 hours and 15 minutes, no one would call you a liar. You lied to me. It's just how we talk, right? We use approximations all in normal speech. The Bible's normal speech. And so there are approximations. I'll give you the classic example is in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Paul tells us, referring back to Numbers chapter 24, that 24,000 died by the plague. Actually, Paul says 23,000. When you go back and you cross-reference that in Numbers, it's 24,000. See, there's a mistake in the Bible. It's just the language of approximation, right? The Bible was not written as an exact military accounting of the bodies. 23, 24, It was in that range, probably 23,496, something like that. One guy said, yeah, it was 23,000. One guy said 24,000. You know, the glass is half empty, the glass is half full. It's not an error. It's just the language of approximation. Does that make sense to you? All right. That's all we're going to say about bibliology. So we did pretty good. That's great. We did it. And let's just take a break now. This is a good time to break.